Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And the Redskins. But we've got to start on the hardwood. Find out what's going to happen with Bradley Beal and the Wizards. So let's do it right now. NBA set to return this month, just about 3 weeks away. Chase Hughes of NBC Sports Washington covers the Wiz. Chase, we found out last night Brad Beal is not sure that he's going to participate. What's the timeline on players saying yes or no? Or are they going to be able to pull out kind of any day that they want to? Like, can they show up and leave? How's that going to work?
Yeah, I think it's very fluid. You know, the date, or I guess it was sort of a soft deadline for players to opt out, was June 26th. But as you talk to members of the front office and agents, they said, nah, the real date's July 1st. That's when rosters are due. But the Wizards aren't going down to Orlando until July 7th, and they don't play until July 31st. So Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, has said over and over that players have a choice here. And if anyone didn't feel comfortable, even when they went down there, even after game started, they would leave without getting any more punishment other than foregoing their prorated salary. So I think it's really fluid. I would think that July 7th is a big date to keep in mind for Bradley Beal because, you know, he can back out before he even has to go down there. But once he goes down there, that to me would signal a level of commitment that he's looking to play some games.
So if Bradley Beal goes, that's one, and that's more than all the Nets, it sounds like, that are going to go. The Wizards might have a shot at this thing, Chase, to overtake a group that will be fielding a sub-G League team, it seems like. What are their chances if he does play?
Yeah, Brooklyn is seventh in the Eastern Conference, so we've been focusing on Orlando because they're eighth and the Wizards have to get within four games of eighth. But Brooklyn certainly seems like the most vulnerable team. The Magic actually have an easy schedule compared to the Wizards and Nets if you look at the fact they don't play the Bucks or the Clippers or the Lakers or any of the top teams, while the Wizards and the Nets have to deal with the Celtics and the Bucks. And the Nets are so injured, as you mentioned. It's not just Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. It's DeAndre Jordan. It's all sorts of players. I think a lot for the Wizards hinges on Bradley Beal. I think if he doesn't play, then what's left is basically a summer league team, and they still won't have enough to overtake the Brooklyn Nets. But if Bradley Beal goes, I think they have a likelihood to make one of those final two spots, and Brooklyn would be the team to watch to fall out.
Wow, that would be really cool. You know what's weird, though, is – even if Beal doesn't play, I'm not sure if it'll change my interest in watching. Like, I'm going to watch no matter what because I know it's only a few games and I've been waiting for a while for sports. Do you think that that's how most sports fans in town feel, or do you think the numbers, viewers, and otherwise will change for the Wizards if no Beal?
I think people are going to be watching, especially at the beginning, no matter what and no matter who's playing, because it's just going to be so interesting. It's like, you know, we're looking ahead to Major League Baseball. I'm really excited for the Nationals to play the Yankees on opening day. But that's going to be, you know, at Nationals Park, there's not going to be fans, but a lot of it's going to look normal on television. What the NBA is doing is going to look very, very different. You know, not only no fans, but you're at Disney World, and there's going to be so many precautions with, you know, the coaches potentially wearing masks, and, you know, there's going to be maybe some additions to the broadcast, like mic'd up players. So it's all going to look so different. I think there's going to be a lot of interest early on, even in a Wizards-Suns game, the second day of the season starting, which is the 21st and 22nd teams out of 22 going down to Orlando in terms of records. I think that's going to be interesting. And you're right, even if Bradley Beal doesn't play, it's still going to be fascinating to watch the Wizards' young players sort of develop in high-intensity games as they look ahead towards next year and trying to develop guys like Troy Brown Jr. and Rui Hachimura.
Who are you most excited to see of those young players, if you got to pick one?
I think it's Rui Hachimura because, you know, obviously he was the ninth overall pick a year ago, but I've just heard good things coming from the practice facility about how he trained a lot during the time off. You know, it's going to be 4.5 months in between games, so that's basically an entire offseason. And who generally makes the biggest leap across an offseason in the NBA? It's the youngest players. And Rui Hachimura, they say he's gained some weight. He's added some range to his shot, and he's just going to be so important looking towards next year. You hope to have John Wall back, Bradley Beal, Davis Bertans. You don't go far down the list before you find Rui Hachimura in terms of one of their biggest pieces. So he's fascinating. I want to see, is he a three or is he a four, small forward or power forward moving forward?
Chase, thank you, sir. We appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Let's talk baseball. Jesse Dougherty covers the Nats for the Washington Post. Jesse, the report date was July 1st. Should I assume that players are actually on the field at Nats Park right now taking BP, or have we not gotten to that point yet?
No, we're not at that point yet. They're in the testing period. The league is calling it intake screening. So what's happening now is guys are undergoing tests. Those results turn around in 24 to 48 hours. A bulk of them were conducted yesterday. And then once you need to essentially get a negative result before you're cleared to enter training. So that goes for players, staff, coaches. And once they are, that's why it's sort of going to be a slow run here. Brian Cashman, the Yankees GM, said yesterday that he sees Friday or Saturday as a start date. And I think it's fluid because teams are still working out this testing model.
Jesse, do you see more guys pulling out or opting out of this season?
I think there's a chance for sure. I mean, I think we need to leave open the fact that the guys who did it obviously had strong enough concerns that they felt comfortable doing so before actually seeing how this works. But there were other players kicking around those same concerns, and they're willing to say, okay, let me just give this a try. Let me maybe dip a toe in, so to speak, and see how this is going to go. And they might not like it. They might say testing results are too slow. They may say we're trying to limit overcrowding in shared areas like the clubhouse or locker rooms or whatever it may be, and it's too crowded for me. Like it's down to a third capacity, but there's still a guy way too close to my locker, or the shower is not as clean as I would like it. We need to leave open the fact that players may see this process, see this model, and not feel comfortable. And that's not with just the Nationals, that's league-wide. And that's not necessarily based on conversations, more theoretical in the sense that these concerns already exist, and now they're taking it into a situation that, for many, until now, they won't know how it is until they see it.
Have you talked to Nats officials kind of about what they're expecting now as they get back to the field and the loss of Zimmerman and Ross, and if somebody else, Doolittle or otherwise, was to pull out? I mean, they released the statement, Mike Rizzo standing by his players, and that's great. And I think publicly, whether you actually think that or not, that's what any executive is going to do, by the way. But what do they think about, you know, whether or not those are damaging blows or if they still like their chances?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke with a few people, and I think the understanding is that from a baseball standpoint, these two guys factored into your 26-man roster. It will now be, you know, expanded to 30 at the beginning of this year. But they weren't key pieces in the sense, you know, obviously it's easy to say, but you didn't lose Max Scherzer, you didn't lose Juan Soto. I do think that from a baseball standpoint, there is disappointment on the end of, you know, they wish those guys could come into the season. Joe Ross being a fifth starter candidate and probably in line to have that role. Ryan Zimmerman being in the first base rotation and also a really good candidate to DH against left-handed pitchers with the universal DH in effect. So there is a loss. I mean, your team gets worse because now you're pulling guys onto your 30-man roster that you otherwise thought would be reserves or just, you know, extras, so to speak. So I do think there is a sense that it's not great from a baseball standpoint, but it's also, it probably could be worse if we're talking about strategy and lineup construction.
I think a short season is bad for development for young players, right? Because they're not really going to have a minor league season. They're sort of just going to be working out at like a spare field, like they're playing American Legion ball this summer. But for a guy like Carter Kieboom, he needs the at-bats. And where are they going to come from, Jesse? Is this kind of a lost year for talent development for some of these guys?
Yeah. I mean, and that extends, you know, beyond the guys like Carter or Luis Garcia, who's in the player pool, or Jackson Rutledge. I mean, from just an overall player development standpoint, this is a really dire season for baseball. You're losing. I mean, some guys are losing a full year. Anyone outside of that 60 player pool who has nowhere to play, nowhere to train, no coaches to work with. I mean, they'll probably do things over Zoom or give you a workout plan, but that only goes so far. So you're losing a critical year for a lot of young players, whether they're sort of in their minor league prime trying to scratch the surface, whether they're just starting out as recent draft picks and could go to, you know, whether it's Gulf Coast League or Hagerstown or, you know, one of these smaller facilities, that's all gone. And you mentioned the alternative training site for the extras, like that will be better than nothing, but it won't be playing games. It won't be a full minor league schedule to work on your swing, to make mistakes, to learn how to, you know, deal with the failure that comes. It's just so much heightened beyond whether you're coming from a young kid from the Dominican Academy or you're coming from college or high school. It's such a heightened sense of responsibility and of that failure, and everyone's going to lose that. And the reverberations of it should be felt for a long time.
Jesse Dougherty, Washington Post, covers the Nats. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Let's talk some football. J.P. Finley, NBC Sports Washington. 87 investment firms asked Nike, FedEx, Pepsi to stop doing business with the Redskins. How big of a deal is that?
It's big. You can't ignore that. And I think the organization and Redskins owner Dan Snyder particularly has been steadfast in having no interest in changing the name. But I think the only two ways that this thing maybe ever happens is if there's serious financial pressure. If Nike actually says, you know what, we're not going to do it. Now, people need to realize Nike can't get out of that deal because they would have to get out of their whole NFL deal. It would be extremely complicated. But FedEx, Pepsi, all these companies that do specific business with the Redskins, if they're willing to pull their sponsorships, that could be the straw that breaks the camel's back, because that money is not league-wide shared. That money goes directly to Ashburn, and that won't be tolerated, giving up what are, you know, eight-figure sponsorship deals. I think that's one way, and the other way is if the NFL forced it, if Goodell with support of, you know, 25 other owners said, hey, we want you out because there's some, we want the name changed. And there are all these, like, if you remember the guy that owned the Clippers, it took an extreme scenario, but they forced him to sell. These types of things exist. I don't think that would ever happen, but if the financial pressure really starts to mount, I think that could be the kind of impact that would actually change the name. I don't know if it'll happen, but it's pretty interesting.
Jack Palance Finley, Bucky Brooks, a guy that I respect an awful lot, basically said that Chase Young is so great that the Redskins are going to a Super Bowl within a couple years. That's obviously the dream scenario. That's why you draft somebody that high. But just what were your thoughts about that, and how much of an impact is realistic?
That is significant praise. I hadn't heard that yet, but I think Chase Young is going to be dominant. I think he's going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think he could be a real Defensive Player of the Year candidate in a year or two. I think he's going to have double-digit sacks. I think the Redskins' defense will have significant improvement with him on the field. I think sky's the limit for that dude. In a way that, now the Skins haven't drafted that high, but since RG3, you're talking about a truly dynamic, game-changing player. And maybe, you know, Terry McLaurin is that guy also, but I think Chase Young's ceiling significantly higher.
J.P. Finley, check him out, NBCSportsWashington.com. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you hopping on the Blitz.
No problem, fellas. Thanks.
Movie Club at 12:45. Will Brinson on the NFL at 1. And we'll get you the latest on the NBA with Andrew Sharp at 1:30. All coming up in the second half of our show on Grant and Andrew. He's Danny. I'm Grant. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. Major League Baseball back in action soon enough. They have reported now all around the country to their ballparks. Teams are going to be training within the next couple of days. You just heard Jesse Dougherty on the Blitz telling us exactly what's going on with the testing being done as players show back up. So we're going to have games this month. July 23rd, the Nats and the Yankees are supposed to kick off the season with a nationally televised opener, hopefully Max Scherzer against Gerrit Cole, which could be incredible, and the numbers for that game could be massive. But there's still a fight behind the scenes going on between the players and the owners because they didn't get a deal longer than the one that was mandated by the commissioner. The commissioner's Rob Manfred. He was on Dan Patrick's show yesterday, and he said something that drew the ire of players. Listen to what Rob Manfred said about the length of the season and the fact that this was kind of always what was going to happen.
Look, I think the most important thing to our fans is that we're going to make every attempt to get the game back on the field. You know, I know some people have talked about longer seasons, 62 short. The reality is we weren't going to play more than 60 games, no matter how the negotiation with the players went or any other factor. 60 games is the outside of the envelope given the realities of the virus.
That was Manfred on the Dan Patrick Show yesterday. So a lot of people hear that and they go, well, doesn't that just win the grievance that the players have? I mean, they're fighting this grievance to say that the owners never planned on actually playing more than 60 games and never actually negotiated in good faith. So the question becomes, doesn't that just mean that they win? Did he just hand them their grievance on a silver platter? What do you think about that?
I know the rest of the quote might get lost in there. You know what I mean? Where it's like, well, given the state of the virus and given all this, you still wasted a lot of time. That should have been the message from Jump Street saying, let's give you guys more off days. We can't do more than 60 because of the virus. That's not how this back and forth went. So the players are absolutely right to be annoyed about this. But meaning, what did we do for 2 months? This was always going to be it because of the virus? You didn't say that. If you had, it may have been a different set of circumstances. It's not what you were leaking out to Carl Ravitch and everybody else. If I'm a player, I see that and I'm going, are you bleeping kidding me? And that's just foot and mouth kind of a thing.
Here's what I don't quite understand either. And the reason I don't think it's as simple as, oh, they now win their grievances. He's talking about if this firm September 27th date was always held. But they could have played more games than 60 if they wanted to extend into the fall. Like, supposedly we're going to be playing NFL football in October and November and December. Why is that different? I understand that the weather and playing cold weather football is easier than playing cold weather baseball. But you're talking about really, you know, the end of October, probably before that starts anyway. And you easily could have, it's not like there's home field advantages with home crowds anyway. You could have neutral site games. You could go to Florida or Arizona or places where in October and November it's still very comfortable to play baseball. So I've always kind of disagreed with the notion that 60 games was the max or that they couldn't go past September 27th anyway. But if he's holding true on that and he's saying, yeah, we always knew we weren't going to play past September 27th, then yeah, that's a really bad look for the owners. And he shouldn't have said that. I just don't necessarily believe that that was the case. I think they kind of decided on that date arbitrarily. Like, why September 27th, not October 8th? What's different about those 11 days or whatever it would be? You see what I'm saying? I've never understood how that date became this hard and fast rule that we can't possibly have a regular season game after that.
It's made up. It was flimsy. It was to make sure we get X number of playoff games in. They're not turning the lights off at the ballpark if you go past a certain day. I mean, maybe some of the flimsy science about, well, we think it's going to be worse in November, but we don't know. I mean, nobody knows. Now, what I would have liked to have seen is the attempt to play as many games as possible. And yeah, the players, and you could call them selfish if you want to, they wanted more prorated money, meaning more games, but that still would have gotten me more games. So I'm on their side. I want more games. What I would have liked to have seen was, we're going to try to get as many games in as possible. And then you maybe have to back off of that, right? What the owners did is they said, this is your pile of money. Play 60, play 20, play 50, whatever. We're not going past this. You guys do what you want. And the players came up with a bunch of different ways to do it, to get more games in, and they made concessions. And the owner said no. And this is apparently what Manfred is telling you. He's tipping his hand, saying, well, we were never going to go past this. Oh, cool. You know, thanks for you know, accusing the players of not negotiating in good faith, by the way, which is something you did. Appreciate that.
Rob Manfred, Dan Patrick Show, talking about whether or not 60 was always the number that Major League Baseball was going to play. Here he was yesterday.
You know, I think this is the one thing that we come back to every single day. We're trying to manage something that has proven to be unpredictable and unmanageable. I know it hasn't looked particularly pretty in spots, but having said that, if we can pull off this 60-game season, I think it was the best we were going to do for our fans, given the course of the virus.
It's interesting because it's very clear that this is now the messaging that they've decided to use to try to win over fans. Yep. Hey, guys, look, all these other sports are coming back in late July. You know, none of them are going to be going past the fall. With the pandemic and the players testing positive, we're giving you the best possible situation anyway. Don't worry about the fight we had with players. Don't worry about that back and forth where everyone said, oh, what about 100 games or 80 games? We're giving you – we couldn't have done that anyway because of the pandemic. But by trying to win over the fans, you might be losing your grievance with players. And I also – I just don't believe it for a second. I don't think it's true. I can't start my – like logic or understanding on what Manfred says with the idea that September 27th was a hard and fast get out of jail free date. I think you could have played until October or November. If you could have agreed upon an 80 plus game season, why couldn't you do that? The NFL as of right now is going to be playing those games way more close in proximity, way more contact, way more violent, you know, face to face, exchanging blood and sweat and spit and all those things. You could absolutely still be playing in October and November if you wanted to play those games. That was just the tactic that they used in the end to get the number of games they wanted. And now he's going back to the fans and saying, well, don't hold this against us, guys. I know the negotiation didn't go very well, but we're giving you 60. And because of the coronavirus, we couldn't have played more than that anyway. I'm just not going to buy it.
Yeah, the cases weren't going up in Florida and Texas and Arizona and California to the degree that they, you know, are now when you guys were negotiating in April, May, and in early June. That just wasn't the case. The momentum was in a different direction. You couldn't have foreseen that. So there, he's lying, basically, is the way I see this.
And you're
I
right, dude, because you said they when is the last time you heard Rob Manfred talk about the coronavirus during the negotiations?
Yeah.
It was off the table completely.
Yeah, this was always the issue. It would have been the issue, and that would have changed the way that this dynamic went, but it wasn't. They were talking about CBA next year. They were talking about not going past a certain amount of money. They were talking about, you know, the phrase pro rata got mentioned a billion times over from the player side. The owners, it was a non-starter to them. The whole thing was a mess. And now they're doing the thing, and this is similar to what Dan Snyder used to do for years, is hiding behind safety, citing safety as a way to get some money, right? I mean, D.C. does this, a place that I love. I love living here, except for the speed cameras. They hide behind safety. It's about safety. No, it's not. It's about getting someone going 31 in a 25, and you collect their money because the speed camera got you. It's not a safety thing. And you pretend that it is to continue this policy. That's what this is. This is saying, oh, you guys, this was never going to be more than that because of the coronavirus. They're the bad guy. Nope, you're the bad guy, and the corona sucks. Both can be true.
Let's open up the phones on this. Be curious to see what people think. You can also tweet us. We'll read some responses at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. But the number is 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Remember, in all of this, the players have a grievance to say that the owners weren't negotiating in good faith and never wanted to play more than 60 games anyway. The guy that works for the owners, the commissioner, came out on radio yesterday and said, well, we couldn't play more than 60 games as it was, which doesn't go well, I wouldn't think, for their fight against that player grievance. But do you agree with them? Do you think that we should kind of view this as, forget everything that happened and all that noise about the negotiation? Because of the virus, they couldn't have actually played 80 or 100 games anyway. So take what you can get and move on. Are there fans that feel that way? 800-636-1067. We're Grant and Danny.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Russell. The Nationals undergoing testing, protocol training, and meetings, things of that nature today at Nationals Park. First on-field workout scheduled for tomorrow. We still don't have any official word on when exactly the season is going to begin. It's believed that the Nationals will host the Yankees in prime time 3 weeks from yesterday. Meanwhile, Sean Doolittle telling ABC7's Scott Abraham yesterday that he was indeed planning on playing, but he was certainly hesitant to 100% commit, that he would not change his mind. D.C.-based politicians telling Liz Clark of the Washington Post the Redskins will not be allowed to return to D.C. to build a potential new stadium at the RFK site unless they change their name. From the Crop Metcalf five-star sports desk, I'm Chris Russell, Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
We're discussing Rob Manfred's comments yesterday on the Dan Patrick Show that baseball was never going to be able to play more than 60 games this regular season, and people shouldn't be as frustrated as they are about the fight between the players and the owners, and I'm paraphrasing there. This convo presented by Waldorf Honda, the first and largest remote car delivery dealership for sales and service in the DMV area. Waldorf Honda has kept it simple. Visit their website, waldorfhonda.com. Danny, do you agree that 60 was always going to be the number in the eyes of the owners? Or do Manfred trying to basically change the narrative?
Yes. Knowing what we know now, they were never going to go past it. We suspected something to this effect all along, right? Where they were, you know, begrudgingly going to hand the players, you know, a tiny portion of the overall pool. Like, because again, what was really at play here was the owners not being willing to absorb any losses. To them, it was unfathomable that a business in America during a time when everybody's hurting, that they would have to have a down year. They believe it's their birthright to have incredible years, to have the franchise value go up by, you know, 1.3 every single year so that your franchise gains billions in value over the course of 10 years. Everybody does. Everybody's franchise, no matter how crappy you are, goes up in value. That's a birthright for these guys at this point. So they wouldn't accept any losses, and they were going to pass those losses on to the players, and that's the only way that this thing was going to go. And I didn't realize how hard and fast that was. I suspected it. But now that we see it, that's what happened. That's how it played out. It's now being attempted to be spun into, well, this was always about health. It was not. We know better. We got the text message exchanges. We got the receipts. Now you're trying to tell us that it is. And by the way, you may be right. You may be right. But you didn't know those spikes were happening when you guys were arguing back and forth in April. You had no clue that come late June, Florida, Texas, Arizona, you had no idea what was going to happen. It was a different climate at that point.
Aside from that, too, Danny, maybe 60 was always the number that they knew they were going to play or it was going to be nothing as an ownership group. But guess what? That had nothing to do with COVID-19.
Yeah.
I guess that's how I would say what you're saying in a succinct way, and that is if 60 was the number, it's because they didn't want to lose money. If 60 was the number, it's because they knew every single game that was played without either a packed house or any fans in the stands, they were going to get gutted financially. And so you can't play fewer than 60. I mean, everyone we had on said closer to 80 is basically what you need for an authentic season anyway. 60 gives you a couple months. You come back when the other sports have already announced that they're going to try to come back. You finish playing when you would have finished playing anyway. And then Manfred on the Dan Patrick Show said the one real regret we have, the one tough thing is that we didn't get our expanded playoffs, which as a fan, I agree that expanded playoffs would have been great. It would have been fun and it would have been good for the sport. But the only reason he said that was because that's what the owners wanted all along because they get all their money from the TV deals for the playoffs. So, of course, you're sad that there was no expanded postseason. That wasn't for me, though, I don't think, or for you or for the enjoyment of some 11-year-old kid traveling around in his dad's minivan right now.
Exactly.
No chance. That's because you wanted your owners to get more money from those TV deals. Let's go to Mark in Springfield on line one who wants to hop in. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Mark, what do you think about what Rob Manfred told Dan Patrick yesterday?
I'm abhorred by what he said. I think you guys are absolutely right. He's lying through his teeth. I think it was always all about money. And here's the thing. You remember about 6 to 8 weeks ago when they first proposed the schedules, the players came back and proposed an 80-game schedule. And they didn't say we couldn't do 80 games because of COVID. The owners came back and wanted them to take an additional 15% pay cut for 80 games, and they said, you can play 80 games, but we're still only going to pay you 37% of your annual salary.
Exactly.
It is so disingenuous, and it just shows the owners will do anything to try and protect their bottom line, including lying to the fans and lying to everyone else.
Well, you make a really good point, and it's a smart call. I mean, here's the deal, Danny. What he said yesterday, if you were on in any way, like the owner's side over the player's side, I don't know how you can hear that and not at least recalibrate your thinking a little bit.
What's so frustrating about this is what Manfred said yesterday may actually turn out to be correct, right? Let's say for the sake of argument, you couldn't have started in May, just given where everything was. We didn't know as much. You probably couldn't have started in June or whatever, right? I mean, even no sport has started yet in terms of the major team sports, okay? None of them have. So you haven't lost the race there. But all the discussions were not around the pandemic. If they were, we would have known about it. This would have been a different dialogue all throughout, going, guys, we'd love to do 114 games, one of the players' proposals. We'd love to do that. I just don't think we can. I don't think we'll have enough time. Here's the data. Here's the science. Here's why. That didn't come up. It didn't, and it would have. Believe me. Tell me what makes the owners look better during this entire set of circumstances than saying, guys, we'd love to give you as many games as possible. We just can't because of public health, and here's our data points. It's much tougher to argue with that than it is, no, we don't lose. We're owners. You guys lose. That's basically what they were doing for a couple months.
I love that impression. That's probably
that's my
like.
Owner impression.
Right? I like that owner impression. You're getting into start date and whether or not they could have started before now. So let's hear Rob Manfred on that. He talked about that with Dan Patrick yesterday as well.
It's the calendar, Dan. I mean, yeah. We're playing 60 games in 63 days right now. I don't see, given how the reality of the health situation over the past few weeks, how we were going to get going any faster than the calendar we're on right now, no matter what the state of those negotiations were.
You didn't know that until now. Mm-hmm. So let's say that you're right, which, by the way, I'm not willing to just give you that, okay, and I'll tell you why in a second. But let's say that he's right, that right now baseball couldn't be playing, which I categorically disagree with. If you're going to be training, if you're going to be having these ramp-up practices and all the players are going to be together in the ballpark, I disagree with you. The Washington Spirit played a game last night at 10 p.m. in Utah. They lost 2-0, I think. They're playing. There are sports that are playing. Some sports have been back. You know, NASCAR, I know it's different than baseball, but my point is you got all these guys in masks that are putting tires on cars and hundreds of guys walking out behind Bubba Wallace's car, like shoulder to shoulder a few weeks ago that have had masks on. I mean, they've been back for months, I think, at this point. The idea that we just have to take you at your word, we couldn't have started before late July. Okay, yeah, we'll just believe you and say that there's no way possible that you could have been playing games before this. But let's just say that he's right. You did not know that. He's referencing the case numbers right now as if he knew a month ago they were going to be happening. He's referencing the number of players that tested positive as if that was all, you know, known, that it would be X number of players. And now that's a problem? You know, a week ago in a different interview, we're just pushing through and we expected positive tests, and this is part of it. But now when you're talking about why you didn't start the season sooner, now it's a big problem that you have these positive tests. But I'll let's just say I grant him a point that I'm not willing to. But hypothetically, I say, you're right, Rob Manfred. You were never going to start before late July. That's when basketball's starting. That's when hockey's starting. You weren't going to beat them, which I completely disagree with, but whatever. Those are indoor venues. There's much more contact than baseball, which is outside, where you can naturally distance. But let's just say he's right. It does not speak to this stupid September 27th date that everyone just has accepted. That
yeah,
you
why
have
do we
to
agree
end
to that?
The season on September 27th. So, Dan, it's 63 days. No, it's 63 days until September 27th, which is a random arbitrary date that means nothing. No one ever told you in the health community that you had to finish your season on September 27th. That is a number that you and the owners came up with to try to play the lowest amount of games possible.
What happens
Period.
On September 29th? What happens? I'd love to know. Do I need to move some stocks around? Do I need to update my will? What happens October 3rd? Imagine October 3rd, Grant. Imagine it.
Well, I could tell you, they're still playing. They're playing the playoffs, the most important games. So they're going to be playing all of October into, what, maybe the first couple days of November? That's okay. So really what you're talking about is the first week of November is fine to have the World Series, but we couldn't do it in the second or the third week at a neutral site in Arizona or Florida where it's warm potentially. You know, we can't strategically go away from where the cases are at that point. It's crazy to me that people will just hear that and be like, he's right. You know, that was the thing yesterday. Yeah, people need to get over this fight for the owners and the players. They're giving us 60 games. That's all they could have pulled off anyway. It is such revisionist history, in my opinion. But that audio all via the Dan Patrick Show. Movie Club is next. We watched Zodiac last night. Danny is going to pick some kind of weird science fiction movie, probably, to watch over the three-day weekend. It's all coming up on Movie Club on G&D next. Last night, Movie Club, back in order, was my pick. I chose Zodiac, which I'll give you, and I knew when I looked at it was going to be too long, 2 hours and 37 minutes. For me, it didn't feel that long, though. I really liked it. Crime, drama, mystery, 2007 movie. So this is about the unidentified individual who called himself the Zodiac Killer, who terrorized Northern California with a killing spree back in the 60s and early 70s. And I'll admit, Danny, no, I'm a true crime guy. I'm really enamored with and have always kind of been infatuated with the hunts for these people and trying to solve cases. And this movie kind of just goes in order chronologically through the years. You know, it seems like we got 15 of the 1 year later, 2 year later, 3 years later, 8 years
later. Three and a half months, 2 weeks.
You know, yeah. It's going like 20 plus years worth of movie, it seemed like, which I didn't love it. But look, here's the deal. It had to do that because that's what happened in real life. I mean, they didn't catch the guy, and they kind of came around eventually to thinking it was a certain guy. The acting was awesome. Robert Downey Jr. as Paul Avery in this movie is a 10. I would give Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Graysmith, probably a 9. Mark Ruffalo, who's the inspector, David Toski, is probably a 9 as well. Dr. Green from ER, who I haven't seen in anything else, Anthony Edwards, really good in this movie, eating his animal crackers in the car. Mm-hmm. And the creep, the dude who played the bad guy, in this movie, Arthur Lee Allen, John Carroll Lynch, who was like from the Drew Carey Show and a million other things. What a great creep he played. I mean, I was so weirded out by that guy every time he was on screen.
He's
so
a weird
I really
dude.
Liked
yeah.
it. I want to know, did you guys dig it or not?
Good flick. Too long, though. I will say. I know why it was, because it was so detailed, and this really took the world by storm, at least that part of the country by storm, for the better part of years. I mean, every day it seemed like there was some kind of update, some kind of profile. And, you know, it led to, you know, pretenders and not copycats in terms of crimes, but in terms of, you know, prank phone calls and letters and ciphers and things. And this era, right, sort of right around Zodiac and then setting another 10 years before Son of Sam in New York and Ted Bundy, it really showed you how far law enforcement had to go before they get to the point where they were maybe 10, 15 years later, right? To the point where they can solve the Unabomber case in the 90s with science that hadn't been invented yet versus this, where you can barely get a conference call going between two municipalities where there were murders.
Yeah,
and that whole scene
tough.
Where Anthony Edwards is on the phone. He's going, why would I call them? Well, you need to get this task force. What about them? You got to do this. And it was just so chaotic and nobody talked to each other that somebody like this could exist and get away with it. I mean, what's so crazy about the actual story, GP, and that's why I was fascinated about this. I agree with you, by the way, about the acting. I thought it was outstanding. I thought everybody in their role was really, really good. That A, you touched on it, they never solved it, but B, the who they were suspicious of. I mean, this guy, Arthur Lee Allen, fit every bill that you could possibly come up with, but just all the evidence was circumstantial. He was exonerated at pretty much every point, but there was a time that people thought it was actually Ted Bundy who did this. They thought it was the Black Dahlia killer, famously, the person who murdered Elizabeth Short back in the 40s. I mean, they could not figure this out.
Do you think today they would have caught him because of the technology they have that they didn't then?
Yes, I really do. I think so at this point. But again, there have been people who have come forward in the early 2000s who were like, yeah, I think it was my dad, or I think it was this guy I met at the dock one time, or a lawyer that had been disbarred for swindling his clients came forward and was like, I met the guy once and I'll help you for a fee. I mean, all sorts of stuff has come up and they never solved it. It's crazy.
So I have two questions. One is for you and then the other I want Thom and Dar's take on. The first, why didn't they talk to Mike Magoo way sooner, whatever that guy's name is? The kid in the opening scene who survives when his girlfriend or love interest is killed. And this is real life. I mean, this is not just, like, the movie. But they end up talking to him. They fast forward to, like, I want to say it's, like, 1981 when that happened, or 83. No, you know what? If I remember correctly, it was 91 or something like that. But anyway, the shooting, he got shot by this guy in 1969. And over again, as they're trying to crack this thing, they keep talking about going and getting him, but he's left the state. And I mean, to me, over hell or high water, that guy has seen this dude's face. I think I know who it is. I'm finding that person. I'm presenting a picture to him to say, is this the guy that, you know, eight pictures or whatever, is he here? And when they eventually do that, 30 years later, he puts his finger on the guy they always thought it was. Why didn't they do that 25 years before that?
Great question by you. Great question. I mean, that was even mentioned once quickly in the movie where
It's reoccurring like six or seven times. Yeah. Like Jake Gyllenhaal and different people are like, why don't we go find Magoo and let him tell us who we saw? And they're like, he's gone. Okay, great.
Okay.
Find his ass.
Bye then. Yeah. And I was in, you know, the, and the depiction of, and again, this is terrifying. I mean, absolutely terrifying. The woman and her baby who escaped Zodiac Killer. Seemed like, couldn't they have helped with it, with something? You know, I mean, I don't know. Just it's. I mean, it seems like people that actually saw the guy and lived weren't really tapped or counted upon to help.
Did
you know?
Did we present pictures to her to you know, finger the suspect and put her finger right there on his picture? I mean, they had guys that they really liked a couple times over. All right, tag in Thommy and Dar here if you guys have a thought on any of the things we've discussed or just want to break down what you thought of the movie last night.
So I'll be honest with you. I've seen this movie a couple times, but I forgot how long it is. So about an hour in, I just fast forwarded for like half an hour. I just had
so
to
the
cut
part,
the time.
Basically,
down.
The part where they were on Arthur Lee Allen, like the, you know, that's because that's like the 45-minute middle chunk right there where they're determined that it's him, and then they figure out it's on him.
Do we all think Arthur Lee Allen did it? By the way, I think he did.
Yes,
I do not.
You don't.
I don't.
Wow. Even though the dude pointed right at him 28 years later and said, I'm sure this is the guy that shot me, and he has no indication. They give him a bunch of pictures, and it's the guy where all the evidence circumstantially points to him, and then the guy basically says, this is definitely the guy that shot me.
Just nothing matched up in real life, whether it was ballistics or the handwriting or anything else. It never came together. I'm just talking about in real life with the with the evidence. I mean, they couldn't pin it on him.
He lived across the street from the girl who knew the killer in the opening killing. That guy lived across the street from her. You know, Thommy, do you think it was him?
No, I don't.
Wow. Do you think it was someone we met in the movie, or do you think it's just someone we never knew about?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what Danny was saying about how there are so many, you know, fake Zodiacs that came forward and all the people that wrote the letters. There's still ciphers that haven't been completely decrypted yet, even to this day. So I would have to say, if I'm playing the odds and still protecting myself on the radio from saying anything crazy officially, I don't think he did it.
Okay, my last question, because I could keep going because there were so many things that got me. So this is more for Danny and Thom, who are opposite me and Dar, and don't think that Arthur Lee Allen did it. I would ask.
Is this still Movie Club?
Where are we?
Yeah, I think this is still Movie Club.
I think it's technically still Movie Club.
Where was I going with that? I want to know why so many things point to him then. Like, do you agree that he was a creep that knew them all and was involved in? Okay.
Yeah,
I agree that he was a creep.
I don't think that's in question. I think that he is a creepy guy that got caught in the complete wrong circumstance. And because of the police work that was back then, it was a lot easier to just go, he's the guy.
So, like, DNA never matched up, Jeeps. I mean, some of the stuff that they didn't have at the time.
Yeah,
they
said later, that at the end of the movie.
Yeah, just it didn't fit. And, you know, you almost, I mean, I say this in a terrible way. Obviously, if an innocent man was convicted, you wouldn't want that. But you almost wish it did because you feel better when it's solved. You don't feel better that it just stops. And you go, all right, is this it? Are we go back to normal? What's the deal? I mean, there was suspicion that he was the monster of Florence, the Zodiac killer, that he just happened to go to Italy on vacation and he would commit heinous crimes, and they could never solve those. I mean, they thought the Unabomber was him. I mean, everybody under the sun at one point was sort of suspected of this, and they never totally solved it. And that's always just it gives you shivers down the spine, man.
Gylo says that the guy that I kept asking why they didn't track him down wasn't willing to talk for a long, long time. So maybe he just said, I'm not getting involved in this until it was too late. Because when he eventually said it was Alan, before they could go arrest him, he died of a heart attack. Yeah, what a crazy, crazy movie. That scene with Vaughn in his house, by the way, spooked me out hardcore last night when he's taking him down into the basement. Yeah. Oh, that was a show. All right, Danny, what are we watching this weekend?
It's on HBO. It's a movie that I've wanted to watch for many moons. I think it looks awesome. I've heard great reviews. Ford versus Ferrari. Christian Bale, Matt Damon. It looks cool. I'm a big Formula One guy. Obviously, lifelong Formula One fan from watching Formula One racing.
Well,
the Ride or Die series, whatever it is.
Spoiler alert, Danny. It's not Formula One.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's Le Mans. 24 hours of Le Mans.
Was a lifelong fan. I know the difference,
right,
clearly.
Of course.
I know that one is not the other. As someone that's a big Formula One guy.
The only thing you'll have in common with Formula One is the fact that Ferrari is involved.
Yeah, there are race cars.
Yeah.
And Lewis Hamilton wins every time they race. That's what I know. So I learned something new just now at Movie Club. Well, yeah, Ford versus Ferrari.
I'm
that's
so
what
happy
we're watching.
About this.
I have seen the movie, and I know that you guys are all going to enjoy it. I'm glad someone picked it.
All right, I'm pumped. I thought we were getting like a goblin or some type of witch who had
you deserve it.
Snow globe and something weird was going to happen. So this is great. This is really, really good. I'm excited.
All Ford I do is pick movies Ferrari. That everyone likes, like Indiana Jones.
Trying to pick a smashola. You owed us after Indiana Jones. There's no doubt
I'm
about
sure
that.
I do. 92-8, never forget.
This movie is way better.
Will Brinson. That would just mean that it's okay. It's way better. Just pack it. But hopefully it's good. Will Brinson joins us next. We'll go around the internet.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.